Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Recovery Cast. Find us on the web at myrecoverycast.com. This special edition of our podcast is the second part of an interview Dave and I conducted with Franny J., the World Board Chair, and Anthony E., the Executive Director of NA World Services, or NAS. With the 2016 World Service Conference right around the corner as we publish this episode, we have departed from our normal every other week schedule to bring you this conversation right away. If you haven't heard last week's episode yet, we recommend you start there. This one jumps right in where we left off. We were asking Anthony about his trip a few years back to China. This was about to lead into a conversation about translations in NA, so we'll pick up the conversation now, right there.
Are we hiring professionals to assist local fellowships more than we used to in translations efforts?
Well, and we create, it depends on the community and the language. If the community has a local member contingent that can form a local literature translations committee, then we work with that group. And if necessary, we will try to assist them in the creation of a draft. As it relates to the Chinese, there was no, for the lack of a better description, indigenous Chinese membership population. So we had to use professionals to help us create really rough draft, simplified Chinese information to utilize for PR purposes. But now those drafts are being refined by Chinese members in recovery, both in China and in Singapore, that has a very large Chinese population. So we utilize the resources that are available to us. If the community needs assistance with the creation of a draft and we can locate a member professional, because remember, one of the biggest challenges of translating our message is that we use words that aren't necessarily commonly used in the English language to mean what they mean to us. So having an addict's perspective to act as a root kind of filter for how to translate English recovery language into a native language is always just so tremendously beneficial. I mean, we're happy that we helped to create the Thai basic text. And for the first time last weekend, the Thai basic text was delivered to Thai speaking members, and they were able to read our message for the first time in their language.
Oh, wow.
So that book was created through a collaborative effort of both local volunteers, professional typesetting services, the combination of which resulted in the delivery of a basic text. So I think we've had to become more flexible as the needs of the communities have evolved and changed over time.
That makes sense. That there's certain, the fellowship has to be at least matured to the point where it's got its language. It can speak of addiction and recovery in NA language, so to speak. And then they would bring that to the party, creating the glossary.
Always. Always. Yeah, the glossary, as you know, is really step one in trying to initiate a translations process. Is you have to have that root thing that acts as the foundation of our lingo, or our lingo, since it's so much slang, to be able to express appropriately in the language in question. And as you know, Ron, we've had challenges with Scandinavian languages and the word addict, and you know, Asian languages as it relates to the expressions about higher power and God of our understanding. And so there are all kinds of phrases that we use every day that are a normal part of our nomenclature that don't necessarily make sense or have any meaning in some of languages other than English.
How about the word fix? Yeah. I remember when I heard that the first time I heard the little white book read.
Yeah.
Took me back a bit.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Living Clean had a tough time getting a phrase by because there was concerns about how it would translate, and that's fly your freak flag. And that was a real tough one because it's pretty unique to, you know, American songwriters. And
What's the phrase? I didn't quite get it.
Fly your freak flag.
Oh, okay. You know, that makes me think of Daniel from Germany, though. He he always said, please don't gut the color out of your language for us. Say it as colorfully as you'd like to and trust us to say it as colorfully as we would like to in the translation.
Right. It has just made the board's responsibility for conceptual fidelity of our message as it's translated into languages other than English, that much more significant as the number of languages grows. I mean, the translations, the number of active translations projects is a scary summary to look at.
Scary in a financial sense, you mean?
Well, scary both more in a human resource sense, and a deficiency of the human resource necessary in many of those communities, as well as financial. I mean, the sustainability of being able to deal with translations projects are a great example. I mean, the typical book through its entire process, the basic text, is about $10,000. Now, there are some instances where it's going to be less money than that. There are some instances where it's going to be more expensive than that. But generally, it's about $10,000 a book. And I think right now we have, between a half a dozen and a dozen books in process.
And Ron, today I was walking through the hall of the office, and it was just amazing. You know, every once in a while we bump into somebody who can't help but express their excitement about whatever project they're working on. And today the completion, I don't even know if they've told Anthony, but the completion of the step working guide in Arabic was completed today. It's not off the presses. I don't know how developed it is, but they had the actual text in hand and had excitement in their eyes. And just to watch a piece develop or hear one more language, you know, to get the report when we do our NAS updates on how many languages we're speaking. It's grown just in the, you know, couple of years you've been gone. I think we're now 86 languages and published in 40 or 50. I mean, it's crazy grown. I remember when we were only 26 languages, and that wasn't that long ago. So it's exciting to see the numbers of pieces of literature that are getting translated, not just the basic.
Well, if I could just go back for a second, I think Dave was asking me what was I most fearful about, and I answered one part, but there's a second, and I think probably more important reply to that question. And that's about the ability to financially sustain our aspirational approach to our vision. And by that, I mean there's a balance between the resources available and the vision implementation possible. And that balance is becoming increasingly more difficult to navigate at times. So sustainability is a word you will hear a lot from NA World Services in the coming years, because sustainability balanced by vision accomplishment is going to be, I think, a filter by which we have to look at how we do and what we do in the future.
The challenge is having sufficient resources to actually accomplish everything that the demands are on you to accomplish.
Absolutely.
Every cost continues to go up, just transportation, production, everything goes up. It just doesn't ever stay static for any length of time.
Well, and also remember that we're dealing with a world that's not economically equal. So, you know, you have examples like, I mean, I think Iran is probably the most extreme where, and I'm just going to use a currency figure based upon the last number I saw, which was a couple of weeks ago. I believe one U.S. dollar was equal to 38,000 Iranian rials. So one Iranian rial is 1/38,000th of a U.S. dollar. And, you know, that kind of economy of scale reality exists in the 162 countries that we try to deliver materials and services to. And so there's always more demand than there'll ever be resources available, because the very nature of what we do, the more effective at PR we are, the more we increase the demand for the services we provide. So, you know, there's always that kind of double-edged sword to even being effective and successful has a particular price tag to it. And so I think we're just seeing that reality. And because there's a, you know, there are times where members in the U.S. or North America or, you know, particularly those communities that have resources, sometimes complain about what seems to be a disproportionate focus on areas of the world other than their communities. And I think that the message that we always try to convey is that Narcotics Anonymous, even when it was just in the United States, has always functioned from the premise of those that have helped those that can't until they can help themselves. And that was true here in the United States for a great many years before it ever started to apply to a global fellowship. And so we still deploy kind of the same philosophy, just on a bigger scale. And the need today is as great as it's ever been, and I believe it will be even greater tomorrow.
What, when you talk about the need that arises and that you would be challenged to meet as it mounts, we've talked a lot about translations. I think that would be one. We've talked some about direct interventions, like traveling there and having workshops with them, and the fellowship beginning to create a synergy among itself where it can then grow, and then the follow-ups to those. Where else do you feel that pressure to do things that you are struggling to have the money to do?
Well, I think that there's always a pressure on the human resource as well, and the financial resources to be able to acquire the human resources. I mean, we, as you know, we've always had limits on what it is that could be approached in a given cycle because of a combination of the human resources available to accomplish the work and the financial resources needed to get it done. I mean, we've started to partner in an unprecedented way with local communities to utilize local resources, and I'd say more in PR than any other area of our service delivery. But, you know, if we can identify local resources that can be utilized, you know, there are a lot of events that we don't even try to go to anymore. We supply materials to local communities to be able to go and take care of some of those needs. So it's not just money. It's also about having the qualified resources to be able to do as many projects as you would like. I mean, you know, you'd like to be able to take the literature survey that we just did and take everything that the fellowship thought was important and get it all done right away. That's just not practical for us. And it, you know, I don't believe it has been, certainly not in your and my recent histories. There's always been limitations. And I think that to some degree that will always be true.
There's another piece to the puzzle that I don't think I understood until I saw it more up close. And that's, I guess you could say, financial resources, there's human resources, and then there's something I guess the word I would use is logistics, some ability to coordinate it all. And maybe that falls under human resources, but you begin to have to put enough people into, like, you get an operation that's big enough, and there's just a real burden of logistical coordination needed to even to effectively utilize volunteers, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Narcotics Anonymous World Services is a global enterprise. You know, we are concurrently dealing with trying to fulfill the needs of NA communities in, like I said, 162 countries. I think that's the number. And in doing that, the logistics required at times to assure that a box of literature is going to get from point A to point B past a customs system that is not necessarily reliable or dependable or necessarily even honest in some instances, is just an ongoing management challenge always. The fact that, you know, communities have changed their import-export laws, you have more protectionist kinds of import restrictions that are being imposed, which require alternative methods of supplying materials. Just the logistics of a global enterprise is extremely complex and requires a great deal of attention.
Makes me think about world conventions. just what a monumental undertaking it is to put on world conventions.
Well, and yeah, regrettably, the Brazilian World Convention, from a financial perspective, certainly didn't turn out anywhere near what we had hoped for. But it proved to me that you can have a plan and sometimes it just doesn't work. And you have to make sure that from a systemic point of view, you can sustain the worst case scenario.
Would you say you did that just now? Was that the worst case scenario financially?
I would think so.
If you recall, Ron, I know you were part of the board when we went to Barcelona. And when we made the plan to go there, the euro was quite low. And so when we got there, the euro was quite high. And the consequence was our costs skyrocketed. And that was, we can't control the market, the world market on the exchange of the currency conversion. But with Brazil, it was almost the opposite in an interesting way. Because of the way we had to contract, we had to actually put our resources into the Brazilian bank accounts, which meant that they had our investment, so to speak, to plan this event, to make purchases, and then the bottom fell out of their market. And so all of our prices were set while it was high, and now our money was worth very little. And so conversion happens, and when currency conversion happens, it's not, I mean, we can predict it within some small range, but when it does it as drastically as those two events did, I don't think it could have been guessed given the number of years in advance of these events that we start booking and we start making our arrangements.
Well, and I think just, you know, it made me think again back to our experience at San Antonio World Convention. I mean, who would have ever imagined that we would have had a financial deficit of any kind
in the
World Convention held in the U.S.? But during that weekend, you had some of the worst weather in the southwestern and southern United States that had occurred in 20 years. So even people who were intending to drive, those plans were taken away from them because many of the roadways were rendered useless. How do you plan for that? I mean, you know, so I think it was a reminder of who's in charge, ultimately. And so what it pointed to was the need to make sure that our planning can accommodate the worst case scenario.
And Ron, if we look over the history, I think we went back 20 or so years. If we did the averages over all of them, we're still at a break-even point, believe it or not, because of crazy things like San Diego twice in a row and, you know, in 2003 and again in 2009. And Hawaii, which was, who would have thought Hawaii would have produced the type of support it produced from our fellowship. But again, you know, the powers aligned and airfares dropped, what, 30 days before the event, and people went that never would have considered going to Hawaii.
Yeah, I remember there was a large last-minute showing in Hawaii, which nobody expected.
No one was prepared for it.
That's right.
You know, what did they say? The lines were five times what they were at a regular California site for the World Convention. And then we got to San Antonio, which my experience was it was the most intimate and the most relaxed and the most kind of profound experience for me, because we had so much time with the members because there wasn't the barrage of people in line and the demands on us. We were able to actually hug and interact and set a dinner plan, and I haven't seen that happen for a long time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting example of how if you step back from the granular detail, you look at the World Conventions, you say we budget them to some to come in the greens or in the black, some of them to come in the red, just the reality of where we hold them, but overall to a break even. And when you're coming in the red, there is much wringing of hands and it's scary. But ultimately what you're saying is if you look over time, we've broken even.
And Philadelphia was, you know, was an extreme anomaly. You know, the numbers that showed up on site there without advance notice. I think we had hoped for, predicted maybe about half of what we ended up with on site. So it was really a remarkable support there. And thank goodness that allowed us to have a little bit of a windfall so that when we took the hit in Brazil, we were not so impacted long term.
And the listeners can only get the audio of this, so they can't see Dave fist pumping there on the screen.
Philly was phenomenal. It was, you know, and I just have to say, to live in an area that hosted a world convention, it changes the fellowship around here. It just energizes the fellowship in a way that here we are, what, over 2 years later, and it's still palpable. Hmm.
Well, and that's always what you hope for, right? You leave something behind that's positive.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we've learned that anytime we've traveled outside of the U.S. I mean, there still is significant impact in Barcelona. There's still significant impact in Rio de Janeiro. You know, there's just, it's a remarkable lasting effect that I never dreamed would, you know, I'd see the impact, but we hear about it. And you can't deny it.
Well, and increasingly, we're starting to integrate public relations efforts very specifically into the plan for the World Convention. I'd say at a level much greater than, you know, what we had done in the past. We now have a very specific strategy that gets developed working with local members to determine what the PR needs seem to be, and then create a strategy to try to address some of the challenges that exist in a local community that's going to be the upcoming host of the World Convention. And I think we kind of began that practice formally in Barcelona with a very concerted effort to try to help the Spanish Fellowship both gain credibility with the professional community and also energize the local community itself, and both of which have happened to the point where I think we are still being invited to the EU Council on Substance Abuse as a result. So, I mean, things happen.
Wow.
That are unforeseen. You know, I don't think that was necessarily a target, but that's the byproduct of what can happen if our public relations efforts are successful.
Well, I'm sure you remember the mayor of Philadelphia opened the convention. He was absolutely dynamic. Although he's not in recovery, I actually thought about asking him to sponsor me after I heard him. He just lit that place up.
But well, I will invite you both to do some service at 2018. I'll be just a volunteer there. I will not be serving on the World Board at the convention in Orlando. So we can just be volunteers and then leave at the end of our 2 or 3 hour shift and go have dinner.
Well, you know, if Anthony does his part and makes it affordable for all of us, maybe all of us civilians will be able to go.
Well, Ron, you know, you were as loud a voice as any about the cost matrix of the World Convention. So I will remind you of them conversations that you pioneered in some ways. we're paying attention to them.
How about one quick question? There's some archives in the World Service Office, and that were purchased from Jimmy's widow. And as I've seen the inventory of those, is there a plan that someday they may be digitized? Because as someone who's interested in history, that stuff is like very desirable.
There is a active discussion about how to try to address some of the expressed desire from some of our members to have access to copies of that material.
And really, it's a lot of this has been budgetary resource. How do we allocate it? And a lot of it has been, people have come in and said, hey, we'll volunteer to assist you. There's concerns about that because there has to be some oversight and protection. I think it's all in some kind of protected room that breathes and does all that wonderful acclimation thing going on.
Yeah, it is.
And so, got to have the gloves on and all that. So I'm glad that it's still on the list of things we want to get accomplished when there's resources to do it, yes. So, Ron, I wanted to ask, is this a good time to just kind of run through the several things that I see as really exciting about the upcoming conference?
Absolutely, I'd love that.
So the literature survey is kind of pressing because it cuts off, I believe, for March 15th. And the goal here, of course, is to be able to address the largest number of interests instead of just the few RDs that show up at the time. So this is kind of like the old ABCD list, only fellowship-wide input. And that not only addresses recovery literature, it's addressing service material and issue discussion topics, so you can impact that. This is a killer thing. The Meeting Finder app is now got over 160,000 downloads. So we're using some of the technology that you really pushed for, when you were sitting on the board. So I want to share that information with you. We now have the, what I call the 10-step app, but it's the Recovery Companion. It's an NA app that allows you to kind of do a question answer and a narrative right into your iPhone or your Android. To do a daily 10-step and to keep it somewhere, summarize it so you can see your patterns and do some work on those things.
So that kind of brings in the topic of Apple and their assurances that whatever we put in there will remain confidential.
Confidentiality is really you and your device. It's not really, I think that we have a real tough time saying anybody would be able to pin it or tie it to you, but I think that you have to just trust the technology or not, and those who don't won't. There's more regional motions from outside the U.S. than we've had in the past. That's kind of an exciting thing. I don't know that there's any big movement towards greater or less than support of those motions. There's a lot of inquiries about the PDF version back up online, the low-cost basic text again, all of these things that people have begun to talk about and explore and understand the costs and where our resources come from and what it might do to us and what kind of financial impact it would have on Narcotics Anonymous World Services. And I think those discussions are actually opening the doors to people seeing why we have taken the literature offline rather than thinking that it would be something that would support. I may be wrong on that, but I think we're seeing some shift in the understanding of where the support primarily comes from. And then, like you said, the conference approval track is really exciting in that we're inviting back in plain language how to participate and understand the strategic plan. And then the planning our future segments of the conference are going to be picking up where we left off at the last conference and asking the conference participants to start laying the map or the groundwork for where we next go. So I think those are really the hot, exciting issues that I saw come up through this conference. We've had a couple of really vibrant discussions about how to protect, you know, our resources and our literature. And other than that, I think that overall, we're seeing the conference kind of move into, I want to believe, and I don't know that I know this, I want to believe more of a trust of the discussion-based decision-making than we've seen in the past. That's my hope, anyway. And have electronic polling at the conference with little gadgetry and all kinds of interesting things.
That's right. You're going to be voting using...
We're going to be polling, because we really think that if we continue to... call it voting, we're going to lose sense of the consensus-based, discussion-based kind of development. And I think that really, when it comes down to casting a vote, there may still be some kind of reluctance to trust the technology. I don't know that, but again, what we're going to be doing is a straw polling a lot with those devices, and hopefully that will streamline the discussions.
Yeah, it should save a lot of time.
And if you recall the last conference you were at, the COFAX could stand up and say, can we take a straw poll and see if we've moved on this item? That will speed up that process.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Which does tend to help people understand that we've talked about this enough. We've thoroughly discussed this. Straw polled it, we've thoroughly discussed it some more, and we're still where we were before. Maybe it's time for us to move on. Yeah. How about you, Anthony, in terms of, she was sort of saying things that are coming up at the conference. Do you have any, sort of key messages from the ED to the, anything you would say to the fellowship or to us or things that are on your mind?
Well, I first want to say that I deeply appreciate the two of you taking the time to put this opportunity together. It certainly is always a privilege to kind of have this chance. I think it goes without saying that, you know, we are part of a fellowship that has very different views on a great many things. And that the thing that always protects us is our principles. And that despite what may be our differences and disagreements, that at a root level, we always trust and have confidence that our principles will prevail and will overwhelmingly overshadow any of the disputes that may exist between us. So I think I have a great confidence. I have, you know, over time and having witnessed a great many World Service conferences, I trust that process implicitly. And I trust the unity that comes about as a result of that process at the World Service Conference. So I think that there will be some challenging moments. Because of the issues of the day, I think that some of those challenges will seem and feel greater than ever before. But I do believe in the end that the conscience of our fellowship will prevail, and what's in the both the good of and interest of Narcotics Anonymous will be the result. I've trusted that from the very first one that I attended, and I trust that for the one that's coming up.
Well, I'm sure with you on that. The interesting thing when you've been to a lot of conferences, and I guess between you and me, we've been to lots and lots. And when you've been to a lot, there's a pattern you see where there's kind of a drumbeat of mistrust and fear and conflict that sometimes seems louder than it seems loud enough to give concern about the unity of the fellowship, and you get to the conference and it is so unified and so clear, and the and group conscience is such a force to be trusted.
Yes.
And you see it every time, every single time.
And that's certainly been my experience.
All right. Well, I would just like to say I'm really gratified and humbled that you guys would take this time and sit down. I thought it was too much to ask. I didn't even hardly dare ask, but to have you give us this much time and energy has been really a privilege. And I, as one who up close and personal has seen what you guys do and how hard you work and how much heart and soul you put into serving this fellowship, I just want to say thank you, and I very much appreciate who you guys are and what you do for us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Ron. And I just decided that I needed to give you this little moment for you guys so that you get it all. That's what it's all about.
All right.
That's great. Well, thank you. And it's a pleasure to see you again, Franny. And Anthony, I look forward to meeting you. I'll be coming out as a visitor to the conference. So this was a great discussion. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.